Heart of Sorrow, Heart of Silver. A Hands of the Emperor, Nine Worlds Story. Written by Rounded Loaf and read by Calicaria. This story contains no pairing, has been rated for audiences teen and up, and has been tagged. No archive warnings apply. Summary. For the first time since the fall, the Grand Duchess of Damara celebrates Silverheart with her family. The first morning of the Silverheart Festival was one more traditionally given over to seeing close family, and a tradition practiced more in the lower classes. Melissa, the Grand Duchess of Damara, had celebrated this every year with her mother until she had died during the fall. In the first year of Artoran Damara's reign, they had been confused. The Emperor, knowing not of family, and certain to disapprove of such provincial actions, had not, as was the head of the family's wont, invited them. They had court festivities with him a week later, but as the Emperor did not bring it up, neither could Melissa. One did not simply reach out to the sun on Earth, even if he was your brother. Melissa had always dreamed of having a brother. Artoran was kind and smart and reasonable, in all the ways Shalir was not. Shalir, had he known of her mother's Silverheart traditions, and her mind shuddered at the thought, would have brought it up only to be able to twist it into a revolting perversion of family love. It was not a tradition her mother had shared with the previous emperor. It was not a tradition she had ever shared with this one, either. Her hands rested on the fine paper and gold-flecked wax of the emperor's seal. Her rooms were empty, her own secretary having already left. She was glad for the privacy when her hands trembled against it. She had known that the handwriting on the occasional, more personal note was not that which she associated with the Imperial Secretariat, or, as she became more aware of him, with Clefair Lord Madang, but she had always assumed that the Emperor had instead merely asked one of his personal attendants. The Emperor's missives about Silverheart had always been unfeelingly polite. Always the same words, except this time, after the salutations, it read, "We thank you, our dear sister, for reading to us when we were ill. It was gratifying to know that we both enjoyed some of the same books as children." There was no command in the words, no expectation, nothing imperial, nothing to suggest he truly wanted her presence, except she remembered the small turn of his lips as she read to him, and the Lord Chancellor, perhaps the only man allowed to know the Emperor's heart, had said he did. She looked out from her room, and across the Damaran Palace's courtyard, into the trees that had once been the most opulent wing before the fall. She had been celebrating the night with her mother when it hit. The building, made more of magic than stone, had collapsed. The Princess Lamissa Eir, Dowager Grand Duchess of Damara, was buried in the deep golden silks she had always loved, and Melissa had thrown herself into her duties. She held the peace in Damara using the skills of patronage and politics, magic and medicine she had learned for a life intended as imperial consort. She did not have the time to mourn her mother then. She had loved her, still kept a candle burning for her in the mourning ceremonies, but duty always came first. She was not solely her duty, and neither, perhaps, was the Emperor. She did not wait for her own secretary to return. In the paper and ink she kept for the highest levels of correspondence, she wrote, "Our mother and I used to celebrate the last day of the festival at home. We had a small ceremony shared between the two of us that we would carry out. I have great memories of that time." She did not finish the thought with an invitation, only the usual courtesies that were required, and she could only hope that the Emperor would not be dismayed with an unasked-for glance at her heart. For all that he was kind and benevolent, he had never tried to reach out to their mother. The weeks before Silverheart were not as busy as they had once been. She held her own court, had the time to write to friends and visit plays. Once each day in her court was a tense battle, but now the Damaran Palace was relaxed, and she could save her strength for the central court. She knew the bureaucracy had been siphoning her power. She did not fight the Emperor's office helping her people. They were his people first. The year after the Emperor awoke, Lady Gervain had come to stay with Melissa, to offer her magical help to old Damara, and though she did not say so, to be out of a city where the Lord of Zunid needed her not. From then on, she had slowly collected other ladies, without family, and with land on lost worlds of the lost continent of Cavendor. Even before the fall, she had always tried to protect her people. She did not feel tense coming to the Council of Princes, or when the Prince of Amboloya attempted to encroach on her territory. She had not even felt this tense when she had come to visit the Emperor in his cardiac convalescence. But now, more than ever before, she had to consciously pull her body strong and her face court serene. She did not bring any members of her court with her, just a few attendants. She did not wish to draw her friends from their own celebrations and memorials. Some chose to memorialize the fall on their own calendars. Some chose to ignore its passing on what had once been the imperial calendar, and still others celebrated the memory of those who could no longer celebrate the holiday for themselves. In Damara, large parties had fallen out of favor as families had found themselves split apart across towns that shattered, unable to know if their children or loved ones were alive. The Grand Duchess's rooms were in the upper levels of the Zunid wing of the palace. In the years before the fall, she would try to time her visits so that Lady Gervain would be in residence, and she could wander over to discuss politics over a morning tea. Her rooms were still decorated with some of the styles her father had liked. A few times he had taken her by the hand and told her the stories of the paintings on the walls and the reclining couches engraved and painted as art. She had been sad that she would never have a child of her own to pass those to. For even if Shalir hadn't, she hadn't. If the Emperor hadn't given her a choice, even then, that child would never have been hers to raise. She dressed for court in a gown of white ahalo cloth accented with delicately embroidered blue silks, and thought fondly of her evening jewels of topaz and duskstone, while her chief attendant Lady Arila threaded the magic required to smooth and shape her hair. She had not noticed the static feeling of the magic required for court hairstyle when she was young, but as she was not at court every day, it served as a reminder that this was a place of duty, and not her home. Court ceremonies anchored the start of the harvest season and the connections of Silverheart before the politics began. "Your Highness must be pleased to have received a more personal invitation from the Glorious One," the Princess of Lorash said in a lull in their evening conversation. Melissa looked at the Emperor, surveying the aristocrats dancing from his high seat, looking so serene and unworried, and as if nothing but the music could ever move him. The glorious point at the end of the room that the dancers' configurations all pointed towards. And every so often, someone highly ranked enough would walk up the first set of stairs and present themselves with a question or request. The Emperor would give them the same kind nod and attention and answers he always would, before returning his eyes to the swirl of dancing jewels. Melissa could request his advice, but she knew she ran her region well and had hardly needed to. To tell the truth to the Princess of Laroche would open up a weakness. So instead, Melissa turned the conversation towards the new Mugani operas of the season, knowing well that the princess's son had been involved in sponsoring at least one. The entry to the imperial apartments had changed since she had been a child. The decor was the same, but there were no great sweeps of courtiers in the hall. No discussion, politics, backstabbing, none of the fear for coming too close to imperial cruelty. The guards now were honorable and respected and looked on her with duty and kindness, rather than the veiled, sneering objectification she had felt from Shalir's. She had not gone to the Emperor's rooms often before the fall, and was always accompanied by her mother. Afterwards, the Emperor had removed most of the ceremonies requiring people in the imperial apartments. She had never found that she was able to concentrate on the rooms during those ceremonies. They always felt like they were swimming with unfulfilled duty, and guilt in the slimy thoughts of what she would have been otherwise made to do. Melissa knew the way to steel herself in the face of cruel fear, but she had far less experience against faint, nervous hope. The final set of guards announced her to the gilded doors, and she stepped into the Emperor's receiving room. She fell into her obeisance, and when the Emperor greeted her formally, she brought her eyes up to his hands, dark skin against imperial yellow, clasped together and utterly still. She hoped her own hands did not betray her. She greeted him formally in response. He did not say anything. His hands remained still. She stayed focused, desperately hoping that he was not now deciding that she was overstepping, or worse, that she had already displeased him. He flexed his hands and finally spoke.
"We thought that you might like to celebrate out on the Sun Terrace."
The Emperor's Sun Terrace was not a place of politics, nor of ceremony, or even the Empire. It was as private as the Imperial apartments could be. It was, she hoped, an invitation to closeness. She raised her hand to look at his face, meeting his eyes for the first time. His eyes were warm. His expression twisted, and he spun on his heels and strode to the terrace. Once when she was a youth, she had imagined her brother bright and laughing, someone who would whisk her away on an adventure. Emperor Artoran was kind, but she knew that he had had far less chance of adventuring. Even the controlled circumstances of horse riding and the occasional hunt she went on were closed to him. She followed him to the terrace. Its view spun out across half the city and across to the River Dwahai. This area, unlike so much of the palace, was open to the world rather than reflecting imperial brilliance ever inwards. She liked it. The fine scarlet awning above the table and chairs reminded her, of all things, of Fitzroy Angersell's coat, that he had pulled out of nowhere the moment he had wanted to be seen. She had seen him earlier during that party, a happy man, eyes glinting with hidden mischief, and an eyebrow raised to make her laugh when he looked straight at her. Though there were other members of his company that stood out in her memory more. She knew that there were things she had done that night that she should not even think of in her Emperor's presence, not when he so clearly wanted the family she had once, for the sake of her own soul, betrayed. She had planned to think of that night every time she was forced to perform duty in Shalir's bed, knowing that while she would always put the Empire first, she could still have some moments of joy. The Emperor bade her sit down.
"Thank you for joining me."
He paused, and Melissa was unsure if he wanted her to respond. He continued.
"You mentioned a ceremony between yourself and our mother in your letters."
"Not a formal ceremony, my lord, nor a part of the Pax, or even true wizardry, but a remembrance placed into the world, and a promise to keep love in your heart." Emperor Torn's face didn't change, but she looked at his eyes, and she could see they'd become confused. "I believe, my lord," she continued, "that it was just our mother's invention, an attempt at playfulness."
"You continued this every year?"
"Not in the first years of your reign, my lord, but yes, otherwise."
"A far kinder tradition than most of our families."
To give an invitation to the Emperor of Astandalas was to imply that there were places he was not already welcome. Still, she swallowed her mother's training, and as politely and as demurely as possible, asked if he wished to involve himself in this. The Emperor made a small gesture with his hand, and the Cavalier Anvilius swept through, prepared with the ceremony's requirements neatly arranged in a silver plate. He placed it on the table, bowed lightly, and at a nearly imperceptible motion of the Emperor's hat, left. Melissa described the ceremony, short and simple though it was. A small pool of oil in a silver dish, perfumed liquid drafts for different virtues, the lighting of a wick, a memory held, and no words to be said until it burned out. The Emperor added the unguents for bravery and love, and her own small pieces of magic set the smoke of the final flame. Melissa held the image of her mother in her mind, love overcoming the long sorrow and grief for her passing.
I did not know our mother well.
The Emperor's serene voice was edging towards Tait. She mourned you for becoming Maroon, mourned her brother for leaving, gave the minimum reverence to Emperor Eitanir as she could. Melissa paused. At home, she would sing me lullabies even when I was far too old for them, and recite me stories when I struggled to sleep. This was the life she had turned away from, yearly grief from children who would not survive, and worse grief knowing that she would not be able to help one that did.
Tall Oth's startling journey.
Melissa had chosen to read that to him when he was recovering. Once, she chuckled. She thought it was entirely overdrawn, but read it to me anyway, my lord. And Artorin, her brother, smiled wide and said,
I do hope my own quest will involve fewer kidnappings, although I must say there is something very dramatic about a rescue.
The end. Thanks for listening.